You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we only trip and fall when there are sandbags. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, the hopeful romantic, and I retroactively and proactively denounce anything anyone has ever said and ever will say on this show. Perhaps on this episode most of all, because you would think, hey, school's over, so it's going to be really easy to keep up with the farce. Incorrect. This week, I had basically one day off, and then we rolled right into wrestling camp, and I've had a really hard time keeping up with the farce this week, especially because, as we have tracked this season, this year, the farce has gotten awfully repetitive. There is only so much space in my brain for talking about gender issues, for thinking about gender issues, for thinking about race issues, especially for thinking about race and gender issues that aren't real. And I think all of the farce this week deals with the concept of sort of anti-reality or bending concepts to your will in order to have the viewpoint you want. And that's very tiresome to want to deal with over and over again, especially when you have actual things to deal with. So before we try and deal with those, I need to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip, I think from Dale's Lawn this week. I don't know if he's still up in Northern California. Identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, in Dale's Lawn. Had kickball today. We lost, but I had a great game. I stole a base and scored. And so it was a good game and raced back here to record. So, feeling pretty good. I'm going to be tired in probably about 10, 15 minutes after I finish this protein shake. Probably want a nap. This is running way too much.
So, we're both going to crash during this
yeah,
episode.
Yep. I'm going to start playing. All right. I've been playing a lot of Breath of the Wild, and it's starting to interrupt my sleep. The game's pretty good. Maybe we'll do a review on a future episode. Shout out on Discord if you guys want to hear it. Or, sorry, not Breath of the Wild. Tears of the Kingdom is the new one. Sorry, Tears of the Kingdom.
Whatever the name is. I think you should review it, because here's something that's interesting. That is something that I have seen in public and talked about across age groups.
Yeah.
Yet, it's not a big story.
It's probably going to be Game of the Year. It's amazing. It's not perfect, but it's amazing.
I mean, I don't know anything about it. Zelda lost me when it went to the 3D world with the third-person character. I like the 2D overview. Yeah. My favorite game is Link to the Past. But my point is, I think it shows the way media is biased and the way social media apps are biased away from any of this content, where that should be huge content, I would think.
Yeah, it should be huge. I mean, you're seeing a resurgence of Switch sales and... And yeah, a lot of people are talking about it.
All right, so why don't we do what the media wants us to do and talk about other things? Right. Let's do it in Life on the Midside. Taking a good look around. There's not really something, but we just complain, and I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope that this makes some sense. I hope that you throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. As always, if you'd like to support the show, if you'd like to thank me for continuing to bring you content, even when I am tired and sort of over the farce, you can do so by going to our Patreon or our locals. That's themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals. We accept any and all support, perhaps most of all, affirmations. William, the first thing I want to talk about is something that I didn't even need to read an article, and I didn't need to read or see any of the comments on it, read any comments on it, because this first event really hits right in the sweet spot of a couple of the farcical trends this year. It has Disney. This is part of the most magical farce on Earth. And it also has gender issues. And at Disneyland, I want to be clear, this is in California, not Florida, which, again, speaks to the heart of a lot of what we're talking about this year, at the Bippity Boppity Boutique. So this is a Cinderella-themed boutique in which dresses for princesses, princess dresses, are sold to little girls. There was a person dressed in a princess costume letting people into the store. This person presents as male. And I'm intentionally playing the word game here to make a point of how farcical it is. Because in the picture I have seen, William, not only did this person present as male, but the person had facial hair.
Yes.
I mean, we talk about woman face on this show, right?
Well, this isn't definitely not that, right? This is cross-dressing. This is, the autogynephilia? Yeah, the getting off on dressing in women's clothes.
What part do you think this person's getting off on? Now, I realize it's entirely difficult to mind read in this way.
Right. This is your expertise. Psychological is your expertise.
Because it could be, well, it's one of the two things we talk about, right? Psychologicalizing, yes, psychologizing. It's one of the two things. Either it's what you just said, it's the erotic nature of dressing as the opposite gender, or it's the attention, the narcissism you talk about. Because here's
the
thing.
They go hand in hand. They go hand in hand. They have to go hand in hand.
That's true. It's very unlikely that in reality it's so cut and dry. Yep. But isn't this what people are mad at Florida about? And let me back that up to explain what I mean. When people say the words transgenocide, right? I believe we talked about that last episode or in a recent episode, right? How people said, oh, there's a transgenocide, blah, blah, blah. Isn't it what they're complaining about is Florida not wanting this to happen? Because, okay, look, I'm pretty libertarian. I'm a minarchist. If you want to dress up like a woman and you're a man, fine. But isn't there something to be said, William, about having responsibility for your own choices? And if you want to do that, not doing it in a place that's designed for children or young girls?
Yeah, I mean, could this have even happened in Florida? Like, would they have even let it happen? Like, I can imagine... I mean, there's a ton of foreign tourists out here, right? Like, but certainly Disney World gets more of them, right? I guess maybe we get more Asian tourists out here.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Disney has many more South American and Europe. Disney World has many more South American and European tourists, whereas Disneyland has more Asian tourists.
Yeah. Yeah, this is just when we talk about the Peak Farce Award. Disney is really trying to win this year. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off. After all, we're going to have a bunch of election farce. We haven't even got to the election farce, right? Like, that's all just boiling under the radar right now. But I think Disney's trying for the Peak Farce Award, Justin.
Well, they're trying because, and I keep bringing the conversation back to this on purpose, is we are not people on this show who talk about grooming. And we are not people on the show who talk about, you know, normalizing and saying that's something that we need to be worried about. But it's really, really hard, William, when I see something like this happen, to think this person isn't trying to groom or normalize or isn't trying to be around young girls.
It's hard to... I think that two things can be true at the same time. And this is definitely true. And because you see this in the Gays Against Groomer movement started by LGB folks, right, that are trying to distance themselves from this, rightly so, because there is the optics. But Justin, that is where the predators will go, right?
Yes. I mean,
why did the predators go to the Catholic Church back in the day and then in the 70s and 80s? It was a safe place for them to be. And right now, the transgender movement is a completely safe place for those sorts of individuals to be.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, it's disturbing to me, and I'd probably be called hateful and anti-trans, but this picture and this story, I can't get around and I can't lie and say that I'm not disturbed by it. I mean, do you have an emotional reaction?
Yeah, unfortunately, maybe this is the death throes of my conservative phase in middle school, but it's disgust, right? I feel disgust when I see this. This is just not, it's not appropriate, right? You want, this is a small girl's primarily chance to live out their princess fantasy at Disneyland. Why fuck with it, right? I mean, it would be easy to play the role of the dressmaker, right? The tailor, right?
Yeah.
If that's what you want, if you wanted to be involved in that, right?
Yeah.
And thinking about it in terms of what is best for the child and for the child's enjoyment. Like this cast member is a perfectly good actor and could be an excellent, you know, tailor. But there's a choice here, and we have to assume it was made by him to be this, right? To be this confusing thing, right? These are small children that do this. This is not teenagers right. that are going.
Well, and that's the argument that people with this ideological bent make. And what I mean by that is it's the idea that they shouldn't be confused. Small children shouldn't be confused by this. It's just the socialization that this is wrong, that this is abnormal, that makes it so they are confused. So exactly the reason you're disgusted proves their point, is yeah. I think what the argument
and
would be. Go ahead.
There's a disrespect for people's boundaries too, right?
Yes.
They're doing this because it will make, conservatives or religious people mad, right? And that it's right. their duty to parent other people's children. Right.
And I think that's what makes me not disgusted, but disturbed. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that's the narcissism you're talking about. It's the narcissism of my values, my worldview, what I want, whether it's to parent other people's children or simply I would like to dress as a princess and participate in this event matters more than other parents, small children, Disney. I'm more important than all of those things.
Yeah.
In reality, other people exist. And if you are living objectively, you must accept that other people exist and that other people have values and have desires that you must respect. That is part of the rules of reality. No, those are not any sort of social contract rules. That is simply what reality is, unless you desire violence, because if you are constantly living in a way that goes against other people's values and desires, then you will lead into physical conflict unless there is some sort of societal mechanisms that are preventing that. And right now, that's what's going on, is societal mechanisms are preventing violence from these conflicts occurring.
And not to go all objectivist on you, Justin, but there's an answer to this, and it's the word no. I think we talked about in the thread with Daniel that attendance is down at Disney over the holiday, and Disney Plus subscriptions are down. Little Mermaid is crashing and not doing well in the theaters. There's more people fighting in the theaters than watching the Little Mermaid. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I already described the crowd for The Little Mermaid, and I understand why parents would feel uncomfortable bringing their children into that type of crowd. And likewise, I mean, around here, sometimes I go on the app and check the ride wait times just because I'm curious, because I live so close. So if I can notice patterns and plan out ahead of time in the coming years, it'll make my life better. And I was very surprised that on Mother's Day, there was almost no one in the parks. I would have thought Mother's Day, there would have been a lot of mothers who wanted to go, but I think it's what you said.
Yeah.
People don't want to spend their money.
For Memorial Day, there was no park ride, supposedly, based on reporting, that had a 30-minute wait time. Whereas at Universal, they were full to the brim.
I can say that here, that wasn't true for Memorial Day, but it was true for Mother's Day. So,
yeah.
I also think there's the where you are. I think in California, people are less likely to go there. I mean, you can still. I think things aren't so far gone in Florida.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy though.
All right, let's move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move forward to more Disney, but not really Disney. And when we're talking about violence, So apparently in Texas, they're using a book story that has Winnie the Pooh in it. Now, Winnie the Pooh is being used because it recently entered public domain. If you remember, somebody did that horror story, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. I never saw it. But the second that happened, people jumped on it. Now, other people are upset because this book is being used to teach children how to be safe in the event of a school shooting. William, I'm not really upset about the fact that they're using Winnie the Pooh in an attempt to create safety during school shootings. I mean, I think we've talked about before that they create more fear than there needs to be in regards to school shootings.
Yeah.
What is kind of pathetic to me is, like, here's a quote from the book. Hide like poo until police appear. This is just like, oh, this is in public domain, so we should use it now. There is nothing about this book, Stay Safe is what it's called. There's nothing about this book that needed to be Winnie the Pooh. Yeah. So as far as like trying to communicate what you're trying to communicate, this is actually a terrible way of doing it. So even, you know, beyond the fact that, oh, we're using Winnie the Pooh to make kids feel safe, we shouldn't be doing that. It's just the blatant idea of, if this is even your goal, you're accomplishing your goal terribly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how this would be effective. I mean, this is kind of this sounds callous, but I mean this genuinely. There are so many risks to consider, and like, I think I joked in the thread that, where's the Winnie the Pooh and the tornado? Because, you know, at least where I grew up, that's a real thing that happens multiple times during the spring and the fall. But from the article, Justin, I pulled the poll quote, but our frustration should be channeled toward lawmakers who resist gun violence, leaving schools and parents alone in grappling with the question of how to talk to children about gun violence with both pragmatism and sensitivity. And then they also said something like, with a mass shooting in the news every few days or weeks. Justin, every few days or weeks? Like, first of all, that's just completely out of proportion considering the risk. And then second of all, leaving schools and parents alone? The government is leaving schools and parents alone? I wish they were leaving schools and parents alone. Does that... Do you see how that's complete reversal of what's actually going on in reality?
Yeah, I mean, it's, first of all, you can't have a government-run school and then say government's leaving the kids alone.
Yeah, putting the school, it's a false dichotomy, bro, right? The school's on one right. side and the government on the other? What?
Right.
Now, maybe you can say local versus state and federal, but even then.
Yeah, and there are certainly elements of local versus state and federal. However, they are implicitly endorsing the schools, regardless of who's in them or not.
Whose job is it to teach your child? Right? Like, the ultimate responsibility is the parent. It is not the school.
Right. And then ultimately, you're right, this is gaslighting. This is gaslighting on multiple levels. One, it's the level of, this is a legitimate concern, when there are other concerns that could be seen, like you're saying with tornadoes. I mean, it makes me think of, in 20 years, are we going to be making fun of this the way people make fun of duck and cover during the nuclear
yeah.
scare days?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Red lockdowns are going to be seen the same way. And then it's also gaslighting. And we've talked about this before, and I don't know if the statistics have changed at all, but I don't think they have. The idea that school shootings are actually no worse than they were before. It's just the media makes it seem like they are now.
Yeah, we have a 24-hour news cycle. That I think that boosts it slightly because you get more. I mean, this is usually a narcissist crime, right? A psychopath crime. So someone who wants to be seen, wants the public news. And this isn't like I want to see someone dead. This is, I want to be this anti-hero, right? I want to make this splash in society.
Right. And if this doesn't prove to you, right, one of the things that people always ask is, how do we solve this? How do we fix this? How do we make things better? And if this doesn't prove to you that most people don't know what to do, because that's one of the thing with all the hand-wringing, William, is whenever anything happens, people wring their hands and go, oh, the solution's really easy, take away guns. Oh, the solution's really easy, mental health care. If it was that easy, did people really think writing a book with Winnie the Pooh is going to solve things?
How well is mental health care helped with the trans issue? Enabling all these cluster B folks to mutilate their bodies and mutilate their children's bodies.
Man, I showed my wife a South Park episode from like 2004 where Mr. Garrison's fancy new vagina, where they talked about that. Yeah. And she was like, they were talking about that back then. I was like, yes, how do you think I know about all this stuff? This is stuff we've been thinking about for a long time. But that's the point is, it seems really obvious to a select group of people, especially people in their own echo chamber. But this is not something that's obvious. Somebody had to think writing this book was a good solution. And somebody else had to think, many other people had to think approving this book. And many other had to think using this book was appropriate and was a good solution. And I think that speaks to how people really don't have any idea of what's going on and how to fix things.
Yeah.
But of course, how could they, William, when they're told things such as Anglo-Saxons aren't real? Now, I think you know a little bit more about this story than I do.
That so is Anglo-Saxons?
Yeah, I'm gonna throw it to you. Okay. But I want to tell a brief anecdote first. So the school I teach at is primarily Hispanic. They call it a majority-minority school, which is just fucking stupid, right? Because, like, mm-hmm. It's all contextual, and if in a certain context you're the majority, you're no longer a minority. However, I say that because most of my students are Hispanic. Most of my wrestlers are Hispanic. And one of my wrestlers loves to say Italians aren't real because I'm Italian and they don't know Italians, right? Not a lot of people know a lot of Italians outside of where Italians are. It's funnier because they know fewer Polish people. But that's a joke she loves to say to me is Italians aren't real. But she's somebody who's, you know, pretty left as far as things goes, pretty social justice, but she's not saying it with any seriousness because the idea of denying heritage and ethnicity is pretty racist, I think. But isn't that what's going on here, William?
Yeah. So what this article gets into, and the article's not that important because you can kind of guess what the content is. They're attacking the myth of Welsh, Irish, you know, British. They're attacking those myths by saying they are
what they're
real.
Calling myths.
Yeah, what they're calling myths. But hey, I would even grant them that they're myths, but not in the sense that they mean. What forms a people is not just pure genetics, right? Otherwise, after the Mongols invaded Europe, they would have all been Mongols, right? We know that there's ton of Mongols genes everywhere in Europe because of the Mongol invasions and all the raping. So the culture is the myth in this sense. I mean the ideas that form the culture, those myths, are what form a culture. And Justin, isn't this actual genocide in a way, right? This is trying to destroy the culture by saying it isn't real. And because we say it isn't real, that means you don't have a culture.
I think you've hit on something really important and really scary here. And it's, again, the gaslighting that's going on here, right? They would say that you're trying to erase, let's say, for instance, Native Americans by trying to erase their culture and trying to take their culture away from them. Because, as you're pointing out, they're very aware of the fact that what makes a people is not just their genetics, it's not just their geography, but it's also their culture. However, think of something that goes on. And I'm sure it's worse in England, where this story comes from. But I know I deal with this, and let's see if you deal with this in Southern California. Let's call it the white man can't jump approach.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, how many times do we hear white men can't jump, white men can't dance, white people can't dance, white people are awkward, white people don't have good food, right? Well, you don't like spice on your food, therefore you don't like good food. Well, if we're talking about cultural relativism, right, and I'm accepting their premise, cultural relativism, wouldn't then all cultures be equal? Why would our culture be, and I say our facetiously, right, I'm not being serious, why would white culture be worse because of no spice and another culture be better because of spice? It's simply because there is a racism through gaslighting that we're seeing here with this story. The idea of saying, oh, well, your culture is all made up, therefore your race doesn't really exist. Mm-hmm. Imagine that was said to black people in America. Imagine that was said to Native Americans in America.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Sargon's been poking fun at this whole concept for a while now, so I kind of wonder if this story is a response to that. So Sargon is Avakad is a YouTuber, famous YouTuber, free speech advocate. He's been pointing out during the open immigration debate in the UK that they're basically shipping immigrants to these small towns who can't really handle that kind of size and speed of new immigrants. And he's been talking about they're displacing indigenous peoples. And he's been pointing that out over and over again, tongue in cheek, right? Like calling the Anglo-Saxons that apparently aren't real indigenous peoples. And he said, aren't we supposed to protect indigenous peoples and their culture? And so he's kind of been forward thinking on this one.
Well, and that's kind of the culture war that nobody wants to discuss, right? The issue isn't the immigration. The issue This goes into our next story. This goes into our next story involved with this.
Yeah, I want to talk about Tolkien though real fast before we get to the next one. Save that transition.
Okay, I'm going to save that transition.
All right. So I want to bring up Tolkien here because this isn't something that made it as a story.
To be clear, he's saying Tolkien as in the author of Lord of the Rings, not Tolkien
I'm talking about
as
South
in
Park
the
character. Yeah, he's named
the
after
South Park
him.
Character. Yeah.
Okay. So. Magic the Gathering? It was Wizards of the Coast. Somebody who has a card game released all these race-swapped characters of Lord of the Rings, including a black Aragorn. And if you remember from Lord of the Rings, he's the king, right? The one that ends up.
Oh, I saw that story. Yeah.
And people are sort of like scratching their heads and saying, like, "Hey, the whole point of this was, you know, Tolkien made this universe that was to." Be some of the myths of the Anglo-Saxon myths, because he found that most of the myths in Britain were French in origin, right? They were Franco myths, not Germanic myths, not myths from the you know, the Welsh, the Irish, the British. And so he obviously, it's all fiction, right? But it draws the same themes and setting and everything else, characters from old English and even before Celtic myths. So making Aragorn black is a little bit confusing. It's kind of like the Little Mermaid with all the daughters being a different race, right? It gets back to this very thing of erasing this culture, right? Where we're really trying to erase this culture.
Yeah, and actually that works with what I was going to transition into, because what you're saying reminds me of actually The Little Mermaid, you know, the idea of changing who Aragorn's race is, right? Because as you're talking about, race and culture don't have to be the same thing. Just because you have a certain skin color, just because you have a certain ethnicity, does not mean you have to have a certain culture or set of ideas. And what you're talking about with Lord of the Rings is the Franco culture, the idea that it came from a certain region. Well, remember one of my concerns with The Little Mermaid was it was a what's that area, the Baltic? What's the area where, you know, Finland, Norway are? What kind of culture is that? What area is that called?
Yeah, it's, I guess, the Swedish or the Finnish.
Scandinavian. Like, isn't that Scandinavian? Yeah, is that Scandinavia? Scandinavia. My brain's... That's how tired I am, ladies and gentlemen. Hit the I'm not a genius drop. Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
Not today.
Thank you. So, one of my concerns was that, right? But they switched it to the Bahamas, right? What's that? Now, what the... That's not the measure. What's that area called? Bermuda, Bahama?
Caribbean.
Caribbean, thank you. They switched it to the Caribbean, and it worked, and it made sense that you had a black mermaid, right? And if you remember my review, I said that.
Yeah.
Because you can deal with the same ideas.
But it doesn't make sense in Lord of the Rings, right? They're not changing anything else. So you have this, the Dunedain, right, that go back 1,000 years, wandering the north, and they're black? Or just him?
Right, and that's that is the racism that is coming along with immigration. And what I mean by that is our next story is, you know, there was something that came out, why white supremacists are not always white, right? It was an Al Jazeera story, Right. And we've been seeing this recently where they're talking about, these Hispanic people, these, as the article says, brown and black people who are white supremacists. But if you look at the picture, William, it shows a brown person, and I'm only saying this because the article says it, talking to a white person, but the brown person has on the shirt American supremacist with the tagline, why white supremacists are not always white. And this is where we can be very clear and very explicit about what's going on. These are the same people who say that white supremacy is individualism. Mm-hmm. They say that things like being on time are white supremacy. What this is an erasure of a culture that they don't like because it holds people accountable. And this is not a white culture. This is an American culture. And this is where I say that immigration is not the issue. It's immigration without changing your ideas and your habits. And immigration is being used as a weapon in the case of what Sargon is talking about, where they're shipping these people into small towns without having these people be introduced to new ideas or asked to assimilate. Assimilate's become a dirty word. It's become a racist word.
Yeah, the melting pot is racist.
Right. And that's the same thing here. White supremacists are not always white because they're coding American as white when it never used to be. Right. What is it? The 1619 Project or whatever?
Yeah.
The 1619 Project is part of coding American as white. It's the idea that only white people had the ideas in the Constitution and the Declaration, and those aren't part of other cultures. Is this not exactly what you're talking about, William?
Yes. It is exactly what I'm talking about. It's to me, we're constantly bringing up this individualism versus collectivism. And I think that the powerlessness of folks trying to stand up against this is that they keep defaulting back into that collectivism, right?
Yes.
And so that's like, but I don't want to leave this section on such a dour note. I think that the pendulum is going to swing back to individualism, right? Back to decentralization. I think that's going to happen. You can kind of see it in this, and like we talked about last week, and all the pushback for different things. People aren't sure where to push back, but I think that there are enough of us, and here I mean Midsiders, out there that can help guide people back to, hey, like, take care of yourself. Understand these things in terms of individualism versus collectivism, in terms of rational self-interest versus sacrifice, in terms of setting boundaries versus allowing people to step over your boundaries. And I think that's the important part.
Yeah, as well as letting people just know you don't have to have an identity based on a culture, that you can see things individually,
except
that you're not
inside.
Beholden to.
Well,
I wouldn't. If we have a culture, somebody tell me what it is, because I just think I'm just annoyed at everything all the time. So
I know what our culture is. I know what our culture is.
But let's take the heteronormative approach here. Well, I can't help that. I'm sorry, but I actually, William, to do a little tease here, I actually had that thought when I was watching the trailers this week. Hey, things have reached a certain precipice here, which usually means we're going to come out the other side. So we'll see. Before we move on to all of that, I want to talk about one last thing when we're talking about like inversion and things being backwards and definitions, right? I talked about already on this episode, the definition of that they've redefined and things like that. I don't remember, but the definition of fascist and right and left have been redefined, and One of these words that's been redefined is punk. And what I mean by that is a story came out this week where Hayley Williams, because I don't really consider Paramore around anymore. It used to be people said Paramore is a band, but now Paramore really just feels like Hayley Williams. Anyway, yeah. Wearing a shirt that says abort the Supreme Court in this picture. I don't know if she was wearing it when she made the statement, but at a concert she said, by the way, I think the concert was in New Jersey, where, that's real rebellious, you punk rocker.
Oh,
in New Jersey, saying, I'm happy to tell you I'm very fucking comfortable talking politics. And if you vote for Ron DeSantis, you're fucking dead to me.
Man, I'm
this is
some,
one of these things.
That's some Leonard Peikoff vibes right there.
Hey, you know what? Look, she can have whatever opinion she wants. She can voice it, right? But the point I'm making is people talked about this, right? And I'm sure you've seen this, William. One of the things that I have a hard time about with pop punk and with going to these shows and being part of the community is I don't feel welcome. And what I mean by that is it's like people have interpreted punk to mean go with the government, go with the left wing, whatever you're being told. I mean, I told this story years ago where I was at a Warped Tour and Gym Class Heroes was talking all about like fight the man, fight the power. And then they were telling people vote Democrat. And I was like, how does this even make any sense? And, you know, you read about it. You read about it and you read people saying, well, if you disagree with this, you're a Nazi and Ron DeSantis is a Nazi and Nazi punks, fuck off. You're not really punk if you're for Ron DeSantis. And it's just like, did you not see what happened during the pandemic? Is it punk to be locked in your house and wear a mask everywhere? Is that punk? Oh, well, they'd probably say, yeah, well, we love our communities. That's why we're punk,
with an S,
right?
Of course.
Right. And, you know, it's the whole idea of like people being like, oh, to be punk, you have to be anti-racist, right? Mm-hmm. Have you ever noticed that, William? Whenever you're out, it's always like the number one thing punks hate is racism. And yeah, racism sucks and it's evil and it's awful. Is that the number one thing punks should be fighting, though, when they're fighting the system? But that's my point. When you look at, so I did a deep dive this week about like fascism and left and right. Did you know like the definition of fascism in Wikipedia says a right-wing ideology?
Yeah. And that's crazy, isn't it?
It is crazy because you go to other places like Merriam-Webster, right? A political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and stands for a centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of opposition. Now, that definition could go either right or left, could it not?
Well, not in a leftist eyes, but yes. Objectively, yes.
Yes, objectively, right? And a tendency toward or actual exercise of strong autocratic or dictatorial control. That could go either way as well. But the point you made, this is the problem, right? How often have you heard people say, oh, America is so far right, it's not very left wing? And you hear people on the left saying that. Because, as you've said, they've internalized the non-objectivity of their beliefs to the point that they don't even see reality properly. And then they get on stage and yell at people and tell them, you're dead to me if you vote for someone that they don't really understand. Do you get the point I'm making here?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's... I think I mentioned to you this week, you know, I was randomly listening to a Rage Against the Machine song and thinking like, wow, you couldn't do that anymore, right? Like Rage Against the Machine was pretty leftist, right? But they were pushing back against the what made that at least tolerable for me and enjoyable in some cases was that they were pushing it back against some of the problems in the culture going on at the time. Think of like what's the Blink-182 live album, the Mark Tom and Travis Show or something, the live album from the 90s, I think. All the stuff that they joke around about, like they would literally be booed on stage if they did that stuff today, right? Like all the dick jokes and like Satan comes on and they're making fun of everything, right? And there's no political content necessarily in that other than sort of that irreverent humor that bucking things and going your own way that many of us growing up interpreted as individualism.
That's the thing, what you just said, and you said it last story. We keep harping on individualism versus collectivism, but that's the thing for me. To me, punk always meant individualism. It's crazy to me to think how there are, I would say, not just a plurality, but a majority of people who say that punk is collectivist. They may not say it explicitly. They may not punk say is it consciously.
Leftist. Punk is leftist. It's not just collectivist. It's leftist now.
Right, but I'm saying they say it's leftist because it's collectivist.
Yeah. I guess there's no room for me to go to Paramore anymore. I mean, is she going to refund money for the tickets?
I wouldn't go to Paramore anymore. And I mean, I haven't really liked Paramore's music for a while. And that's not a coincidence. Yeah. Right? The last album I liked from Paramore really was Brand New Eyes. Yeah. And I mean, she literally had an album, Paramore had an album after Laughter, which people were like, oh, this is an amazing album. Mm-hmm. William, after Laughter, it literally was an album about depression and people praised it.
Damn.
That's what we're doing with our art nowadays. Is it that much of a surprise that on that album, she had a song about called Rose Colored Boy about Chad from Newfound Glory, who, by the way, is dealing with cancer. That dude cannot, like, no matter what he does, I love Chad, and I can say that, because even though he's a celebrity and he's famous, I genuinely love the man, and I don't think he's going to be around for much longer with the way he can't beat the cancer, but he still somehow has a phenomenal approach to things. He's upbeat, he's optimistic, and she had a song, Hayley Williams had a song about how that was a problem for her.
Yeah.
That when they were married, that was a problem. And now she's saying these things on stage. And now this is what punk is.
Yeah. Well, I guess makes it understandable why they split up.
It's completely understandable why they split up. But my point is not to dissect their relationship. Right. My point is to demonstrate her anger. And to me, punk used to be like a justified anger or righteous anger, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I get fighting racism. That's a righteous anger. However, do you fight racism with collectivism? Is this the way to fight as a punk? I don't know. It's just everything seems so backwards and inverted.
Yeah.
But again, to kind of sum up, I guess, isn't that what makes Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged so brilliant? That she concretized that inversion as a theme in her book?
Definitely. Definitely. So Justin, you'll get a laugh out of this. So, one of my friends who will remain, one of my California friends who will remain nameless. I posted this story about Haley and he said, I respect her for this. It used to be seven heads of the same snake. No one side, worst case, wants social programs and the other side wants Handmaid's Tale. She's on the right side of history. So yeah, that's what the younger fans think. That's the audience they're catering.
Right. All right. Well, I think that about sums all of the farce up for the week. Maybe. I don't know. I'm sure you guys saw more farce in there. But while we're talking about an artist, let's talk about some other art in The Hopeful Bromantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't. Find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you'd like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. Just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast, click on any episode link, and in there you will find a link to join our Discord. You can help us witness the farce during the week by sharing some farce with us, sharing some stories, or, you know, give your opinion on the trailers I post. For the review this week, I saw Fast X. It's the 10th movie in the Fast and the Furious franchise. It's interesting how I've come around on this franchise, where it used to be something to make fun of, but now, William, in today's day and age, it doesn't seem like sort of one of the most dependable and most American things going on right now.
Yeah, and doesn't it also do well everywhere? It's one of those movies that is accidentally exporting American culture.
Yeah, so exactly.
Positive aspects of American culture.
Right, and you want to talk about diversity, right? We've mentioned that before, right? Yeah. Vin Diesel's character has the most diverse family ever, right?
Yeah.
And look, this is not a great movie, okay? But it's also not a terrible movie. This is as average can get. 2.5 out of 5 stars. I'm saying this all up front because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. I just want to hit a couple key points. Here is my one-sentence review. Facts. Fast X propels the franchise forward with Jason Momoa's Joker meets JVN performance, John Cena's comedic charisma, and the series' patented absurdist action. So, I give this a solid bro for the following reason. When this movie tries to have moments of like genuine philosophic catharsis, it falls flat. One, Vin Diesel can't act in that way. And two, the dialogue is absolutely terrible. And the movie starts that way.
Family. It's,
right, exactly. Like, it's almost become a parody of itself with the number of ways it says family. And, you know, he says things like, I would rather die than, you know, not protect my family and things like that, which are all well and good, right? And those are good motivations. And that's actually a healthy psychological and philosophical approach. It's just the way it's concretized is terrible because that's not what these movies succeed at. These movies succeed at bringing in bigger and bigger stars, putting them in absurd roles, and putting them in absurd action.
And letting them have fun with it. You can tell everyone has fun on these movies.
Right. And that's where this movie succeeds. John Cena is absolutely hilarious in this movie. He's great. I didn't think he was going to be in it. When he was revealed to be in it, it was great. The action, I mean, do you want to talk about a bomb, a giant bomb rolling through Rome?
There's walkers in the barn and Laurie's pregnant.
Oh, that's the opening to the movie. That's like the first big fight scene, yeah. Right? I mean, so you don't want me to spoil anything?
No, go ahead. It's Fast okay. X. You know, I'm just going to watch it. And
two helicopters
and enjoy.
Hook on. two helicopters hook onto Vin Diesel's car, and you're like, man, he's going to use the car to hit the helicopters into each other, and he does. Like, that's why we're seeing the movie. But yeah. Then, most of all, I want to be clear. If you are a Jason Momoa fan, you need to see this movie. Because when I say Joker meets JVN, what I mean is Jonathan Van Ness. So his entire character is the Joker, where he doesn't want to kill Vin Diesel. He just wants to make him suffer because Vin Diesel's character killed his dad in a previous movie. So the whole movie is just like the Joker in The Dark Knight was causing chaos. This is just Jason Momoa's character causing chaos and reveling in it, but also, like, it's very unclear what his sexuality is because he acts very gay. Like, they have jokes about him painting his toenails and painting other people's toenails, and it's like Jason Momoa going over the top. Like, I honestly don't know. I think people are just ignoring it because it's Fast and the Furious, but I don't know how, like, he hasn't been canceled for playing a caricature of a gay man. That's how over the top it is. And it's absolutely a joy to watch because you're like, this is fucking ridiculous. And he's having fun and it's funny and he's a great villain for it. And it makes the movie, even though, you know, without him, it would be a terrible movie. But him by itself makes the movie worth watching. And like, just like, hey, this movie exists. It's entertaining and it's worth watching if you just want to be entertained for a while. Let me put it this way. I think the average Fast, this is something I was thinking about while watching it. I think the average Fast and the Furious movie is better than the average Marvel movie. Yeah, I said it.
Even Iron Man? Well, I guess Iron Man only brings up the
That's
average.
Not average.
Yeah.
Not the best. I mean, I'm not talking Iron Man. I'm not talking Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Can we honorarily keep Iron Man 1 and 2 out of the MCU?
I mean, you could argue it because were both of them made before Disney purchased Marvel?
Yeah. I think so.
Right. But I'm talking average. Like, compare Thor Love and Thunder to Fast X. I would take Fast X every day. Every day.
Oh, yeah. Ant-Man and the Wasp versus Fast 7.
I haven't even seen anything past the first Ant-Man. That's how average the first Ant-Man was. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move forward to Trailer Takedown. Every Saturday, I post the trailers in the Discord. These are the trailers we're going to talk about on the episode. I post them then so you can watch them when you want. You can watch them before the episode, you can watch them after the episode, or you can alternate. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown.
First trailer.
Wow, you hit those in pretty good succession. I appreciate
it. That was close.
Whatever you did,
there's an upgrade. There's an upgrade for right before the show. I think the soundboard is excited for the new upgrade.
Oh, is that what it is? The app upgraded?
Yeah, yeah. It's ready to go.
Okay. Well, the first trailer is I'm a Virgo. It's an Amazon Prime original series. It's about a 13-foot tall young man trying to figure out how to live in the world. And look, here's the thing, William. I actually liked a lot. Like, I went in expecting to hate this trailer, but I went in liking a lot of this trailer. The cinematography is very bright. It's very crisp. This is just a guy who genuinely just tries to be trying to figure out his way in life. It had sort of Man of Steel-ish things where the dad is like, people are going to try and take advantage of you. Right. And then there seemed to be a supervillain. So this seemed to be going in like a superhero way. There's a lot I liked. However, there were two things I don't like. One, I think this title is absolutely atrocious. It's like a throwaway line. Now, unless they're trying to make a point about like, oh, don't judge me by like my appearance and what group I belong to, but judge me by like the content of my character. But the content of your character isn't your star sign, your constellation. But it's just a terrible title, right? And this, it doesn't embody the theme of the show. I could probably forgive that. However, the thing I couldn't forgive is when randomly the trailer was great, and then randomly someone's like, oh, you're a 13-foot tall black man. Of course people aren't going to like you. Yes, the issue is that he's black, not that he's 13 feet tall. That's the issue people are going to have, is that he's black. You know, if he was a 13-foot tall white man, I'd be okay with it.
He lives in Oakland.
That was the funniest joke of the trailer, where they were like, you're the savior. It said you would come from a desolate place. And he's like, I'm from Oakland. It's like, yeah, a desolate place. That was fine. Yeah, so I think they're hiding it. I just don't think that the racial undertones are going to be fun to watch in this. So unless I hear really good reviews, this for me is a tackle.
Tackle?
Yeah, this kind of looks like Clifford the Big Red Dog. Is that racist for me to point out? I don't know. If this gets good reviews, then I would watch it. But based on the preview, it left more uncomfortableness than excitement to see the movie. So I think.
Do you agree with me though that it was a surprisingly good trailer?
Yes, it was much better than what I was expecting. Because when I looked at the thumbnail, I was like, "Oh, this is just Clifford the Big Red Dog." But it looks like there's some depth. Like you said, there's a bunch of red flags, so it's hard to say what they've selected in the theater. Combine that with the title, combine that with the, you know, there's a lot of good artistry that could be done with, speaking of Lord of the Rings, with Force Perspective and stuff like that. Like, you can get a lot of good stuff done, but I don't know.
Tackle. Second trailer.
The Idol is like if you combined Entourage with Euphoria. It's about a pop star who I think is making a comeback, but really it just seems to be about her doing drugs and having sex. It looks to be shot in a very sort of naturalistic way. I mean, it looks to be shot in the same way Euphoria is shot. I don't know. I just see a trailer like this. Of course, it has the pop star, the Weeknd, who, I mean, I think most of his music is about doing drugs. And as a straight edge person, I watch a trailer like this and I'm like, why the fuck would anyone ever want to watch this show? But I have the same reaction to Euphoria. As much as I love Zendaya and I think she's beautiful, why the fuck would I want to watch Euphoria? This is not interesting to me. And William, this is the inversion. I don't understand how naturalism is about something that's not real. We've gotten to the point now that naturalism, which is purported to record life as it actually is just really all about the evasions and fantasy worlds that people create. And it's concretizing that to help them further evade. Now, that's the answer, right? The philosophical bent behind naturalism is more important than the actual supposed technical trappings of the genre. But this is what we've ended up with. And I would watch I Am a Virgo a billion times before I would watch this. Tackle.
This just was annoying the whole time we watched it to me. I'm not straight edge like you, but it still was just annoying. I was like, Was someone taking advantage of someone? I have no idea. And I don't know. It was annoying and confusing.
Neither did they, because they're all on drugs.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Tackle.
Tackle. Third trailer.
Jagged Mind and continues with Williams not having any idea with what's going on. Now, this is what I will say about this trailer. It got better as it went on. It got better as it went on because it started with, hey, we're just two lesbians hooking up. And I'm sitting here going, and it was an interracial couple as well. And I'm sitting here going, so now just every movie's about gay people. Every movie's about gay relationships. Oh, we just have to hit our quota. Right. Exactly. I'm taking the heteronormative approach here. Right. And then as the trailer went on, it became an interesting sort of sci-fi concretization about being gaslit in a relationship, and it was sort of Fatal Attraction, except the question is the main character's mind breaking because this other woman is trying to control her and make her not believe reality is what it actually is? And it seemed like maybe she was like rebooting her life every so often and then making her doubt there were other times beforehand, which is incredibly interesting. And honestly, I don't care what the gender of the people involved with the relationship are at that point. However, it seems like because of what's going on today, this is where they're forefronting the wrong thing, which is the lesbian relationship, not the interesting premise and the interesting commentary on romantic relationships and how humans interact with each other psychologically. And this is actually the trailer, William, in which I had the thought of, this movie was only made in the way it was made because they think it's easier to make a movie in this way to market it with what the prevailing culture is. And that's what made me think, hey, we're probably at the peak of things right now. Not peak farce, but the peak of this type of farce. Mm-hmm. Because when you make this movie in this way, there's nowhere else to go. Unfortunately, though, because they did make it in this way, it has to be a tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah. I'm trying to think through, like, you know, in the 90s, there was a lot of gay marketing. Like, this would have been marketed with two beautiful women, right? Like, super beautiful women, if they were going for the gay marketing angle. And it would have been more of the, it would have been more appropriate in the horror genre, right? It would have been a sexy slasher sort of movie. But maybe a sexy psychological thriller, right? But today, it sounds like something that would have been an interesting premise, but you've brought in all this baggage. And Justin, how many minutes are they going to have to spend on how lesbians are oppressed in today's society before they actually get to the interesting sci-fi premise here?
Right.
I'm just pressing F to doubt. And unfortunately, that's also map two.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Hidden Strike is an action comedy starring Jackie Chan and John Cena. And do you need to hear anything else? Look, I'm going to be honest. Like, halfway through this trailer, I wanted to stop watching the trailer. Not because I hated it, but because I was like, all right, I know I'm going to see this. I don't really want to be spoiled for any more of this movie. Now, I finished for the sake of the show because part of me goes, well, you got to make sure there's not some social justice sucker punch coming up at the end here. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't. But I was pretty sure about halfway through there wasn't going to be, and that this is something, a movie I would watch and enjoy. Now, this may be like Fast X. This may be a completely average movie, but it'll still be enjoyable. Hug.
Hug?
I am excited. Justin, it's got guns. It's got fighting. It's got explosions. All in the first few frames. I liked it. It looked interesting. My only concern, Justin, did you notice the ratio of practical effects versus, and here I'm talking about the fighting, versus CGI. You know, that's something Jackie Chan's always been known for, is doing a lot more of it practically. But it looked like there was one scene in particular from the trailer where thankfully it was a John Cena scene that was definitely CGI.
Yeah, but how old is Jackie Chan, dude?
I don't care. He shall perform for me. That's what he's known for. I think.
I mean, it is, but like,
Is he getting too old?
Jackie Chan age. He's 69 years old, dude. The fact that that guy can like act in an action movie, like Bruce Willis isn't much older and his brain doesn't work anymore.
I know. So this, I mean, heaven forbid this would be his last film, right? But yeah, I'm definitely going to go see this. This looks great. Hug.
Hug.
All right, William, that brings us to the end of the episode. What did we learn this trip?
I learned that if I, that everyone who gets told to vote for Biden should say this. Well, I refuse. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
Are we allowed to use that drop anymore?
She didn't say we couldn't use her drops. She just said that we should do something else, I think.
I don't know. I'm not going to vote anyway. I don't know why I'm acting like I like parts of DeSantis, but it's not like I'm going to vote, right? No, I learned that you can get me to watch a movie about an oil war, because that's what Hidden Strike is about. Now, I don't know what that says about our, that could be saying more about our current culture than like, I'll watch a movie about anything, right? Because it's not all the social justice crap nowadays. So maybe that's all that means. But yeah, that Jackie Chan, John Cena action comedy, you can get me to watch an oil war. Of course, I watched 80s movies about environmentalism because it was Steven Seagal, so guess I'm a hypocrite. All right, I want to thank you all for listening. If it wasn't for you, this would just be me talking into the corner of my closet like a crazy person. It is that, but you make me feel a little bit less crazy. Feel free to support us by going to themidside.com/the store, picking up some merchandise, midside.com/the cut, pick up my novel, midside.com/patreon, midside.com/locals. That is how we keep the lights on. And most importantly, grow the show by telling a female friend, an actual female friend, not one that's a man who dresses like a fairy tale princess and sells dresses to girls at Disneyland. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Floor ever purge.
So, Justin, Christopher Tolkien's death has really fucked up the Tolkien estate. I mean, I don't know, you're probably not aware because you don't play a lot of games, but this, they released a Gollum game, and it's terrible. You play as Gollum, and it's the Gollum character model is wrong. Doesn't look anything like Gollum. But it's a super depressing sort of fetching game with really bad platforming aspects, and it's just doing terrible. And then you've got you know, this whole Black Aragorn thing, like people don't remember Tolkien like fought with the people who were doing the translation, like into, I think it was Dutch or something. I can't remember the exact language. It's been a while since I read this. He wrote a letter in one of his letters. They were trying to rename the hobbits and make it into some like Scandinavian word, right, in the translation. And he was basically pointed out how like he wrote this thing and it's so integrated. He's like, all these things connect to other things. And like, he didn't care that it wasn't a marketable term in, you know, whatever Scandinavian language, right? Like the point was to be immersed in this world. Part of that immersion was all this interconnectivity. So, I think RIP Christopher Tolkien, and I think this IP will be run into the ground.
All I just heard was that interconnectivity is white supremacy.